Hello and welcome to another edition of Five of the Best. This one is going to be about landmarks. If you go to the website, there are some good links to some sites worth watching. The next landmark I'm going to talk about is of the Taj Mahal. The Taj Mahal was constructed in 1648 and it was built by Shahan Johan, who inherited the Mughal dynasty from his father. And after a brief struggle with his brothers, he became the new emperor of the Mughal kingdom. The Taj Mahal is built smack in the middle of northern India. There's a map showing exactly where it is. Anyway, by the time he was 20, he had in fact been married three times. He was married when he was 15, when he was 17, and when he was 20, he married a 20-year-old Persian princess called Mumtaz Mahal, and she very quickly became the emperor's favourite. In fact, they became inseparable. They travelled together she even went away with him when he was on military campaigns. During their 19-year marriage, they had 14 children, and in fact, Mumtaz Mahal died giving birth to their 14th child in 1631. The emperor was so grief-stricken by the loss of his wife that he commissioned a memorial for her, and this was going to be the Taj Mahal. And construction started in 1632. And the design, which would incorporate both Persian, Islamic and Indian design. The most striking feature of the Taj Mahal, of course, is the dome, which is 35 metres tall and about the same distance from the ground. It has four minarets around it, and the whole entire structure is constructed with white marble and has inlaid of semi-precious stone throughout the building. It took 20 years to complete and over 20,000 workers. I've looked for a price for the cost of the construction, and all I could find was $2 million, which sounds incredibly cheap. I don't know if that's an incorrect figure or because of slave labour. Anyway, upon completion in 1658, things didn't go well for Emperor Shah Jahan. After a short illness, his oldest son took over control, and he declared that the emperor was incompetent of control of ruling the kingdom, and he was taking control. His younger brothers, or his younger sons, hearing this, all then declared himself independent from the kingdom. So all hell really broke loose. The emperor tried to regain power back for himself, but his older son then put him under house arrest, saying that he was incompetent of ruling the kingdom. So the emperor was under house arrest for the last 8 years of his life, and he was joined, in fact, by his first daughter, who voluntarily went under house arrest with him. And he spent he was put in the Taj Mahal. The Taj Mahal's got a guest house on the left and a chapel on the right. So every day he woke up and he saw the monument to his former wife. And he died there in 1666. And ever since then, really, the Taj Mahal went through a period of neglect. And this was until the British came along. And, of course, what the British did is they saw this, and they saw the semi-precious gems which were still inlaid in the building. I mean, they'd been there, like, for 200 years until the British turned up, and they dug them out and sold them. But they did come back, and they did restore the building to its former glory. And really, the only problem the Taj Mahal has now is because of the river, which is by the Taj Mahal, has been used for the new industrial purposes. It's lowered, and that means that the ground that the Taj Mahal is built in has become unstable, and it's causing cracks in the Taj Mahal. But that's being sorted out. You can go to the website. There's a great website of a website about the Taj Mahal. There's some pictures about what the British tried to do to camouflage the Taj Mahal from the Germans. Eventually just put scaffolding around it to confuse the Germans. And that's about it. The next landmark I'm going to talk about has been buried for most of its life. In fact, there's still a great deal of mystery of it, because the sand buries it, and it appears, and then it disappears, and then reappears. And the last time it reappeared was in the 1870s, and what I'm talking about is the Sphinx of Egypt. And when the sand has cleared away, it exposed the Sphinx, and it measured 20 metres high and 75 metres tall. It is the largest sculpture in the world because it is actually sculpted out of the bedrock of where they used to... there's still a debate about how old the Sphinx is. Some people say it could be as old as 7,000 years, and others, well, the majority of people think it's around 4,500 to 5,000 years old. The structure itself, when it was uncovered, has the body of a lion, which is 75 metres tall, so long, and it is 20 metres high, with the figure or the face of a woman. It's believed to be a woman, and she has wings of an eagle behind her, or it's the hood of a scalded cobra. People still don't know. And people think it's a woman, although she did have a beard, and this was added a long time after it was done. She had a beard, and this was attached, and that has became detached, and when the British came, they've managed to smuggle it, and it is in the British Museum. The head is badly out of proportion with the rest of the body, and this has led to speculation that the head has been re-sculpted into human form, probably around 500 years BC. It is thought that the head was originally either an eagle, a goat, or an ox. They don't know. The term the Sphinx was given to the structure when by the British, and it was... the Sphinx was a Greek mythological beast, and she would strangle anyone who failed to answer her riddles. Between the Sphinx's paws there is a small temple, and underneath that there is known to be a number of tunnels leading from this temple, but as yet the Egyptian government has not given permission for these tunnels to be excavated. So the Sphinx will still hold on to her secrets, and the landmark I'm going to talk about is by far and away the most visited landmark in the world. It is the Eiffel Tower. The Eiffel Tower was erected in 1899, and it acted as two things. It was to celebrate the fact that 100 years of the French becoming a republic, and it was to celebrate the fact that the World Fair had come to Paris. In fact, if you went into the World Fair, it would act as a gate. You would pass under the arches into the World Fair. There was much criticism of the when the design and proposal of the Eiffel Tower was first started, because the French, being the home of artists and painters, they objected to the fact that this blotch on the landscape would ruin a beautiful city. So as a result, it had a lifespan of 20 years. It was agreed to have a lifespan of 20 years and then it would be dismantled. Construction started in 1887 and finished 2 years later in 1889. The construction was considered to be a great success because A, it was done so quickly, and B, only one person died during its construction. Now, this is a time when health and safety was not taken quite as seriously as it is now. And on average, one person died every month of construction, so this was 24 times better than the average. Anyway, once it was complete, it stood 230 metres tall, which was at the time was the tallest building in the world. It constructed of 18,000 pieces of ironwork and over 2 million rivets. Now, most of the ironwork was done by... most of the ironwork came from Gustave Eiffel's own factory. He produced over 18,000 pieces of ironwork with a tolerance of a tenth of an inch to construct the tower. And holding it together was 2.5 million rivets holding the tower. Now, Gustave Eiffel was a very successful French engineer, and it was he who approached the Paris Council to purchase a 20-year lease on the land so he could construct the Eiffel Tower. Now, he also asked the government for 20% of the money to construct a tower, and he would contribute 80% of the money to construct the tower. Now, once the tower was complete, it stood at 325 metres tall, and which was by far and away the tallest building in the world at the time, and it proved to be a huge success. Once it was opened, something like 1.2 million people viewed went up at the tower on the 31st year. In 1909, when the lease on the land was finished, the tower was very nearly sold for scrap. But what saved it was the evolving radio telegram service, which used the tower as a broadcasting post. It was given another 10-year lease on the land until a solution could be found, in which time the French people had really grown to love the tower, and the Eiffel Tower has become used as a billboard. Between 1929 and 1936, 25,000 coloured light bulbs were attached to the tower to advertise for Citroën Motor Group. The tower very nearly came down again during the Second World War. This was when the French were occupied by the Nazis, and Hitler ordered the tower to be dismantled straight away because of its use as a broadcasting post. The German who was the governor of Paris refused to do this three times. So, well, up for him. One other thing that made me laugh is when the Germans did occupy Paris, the French resistance went up to the Eiffel Tower and cut the elevator cables. So any Nazi who wanted to go up to the Eiffel Tower had to take the stairs. The last time that the tower was seriously under risk was in the 1980s. This was really thanks to mismanagement of the tower. The tower actually weighs 9,700 tonnes, and in the 80s it had gained another 1,300 tonnes. This is through concrete for tourists, more antennae posts. There are hundreds of antennae up there. And this was making the structure, as far as the French were, critically dangerous. And so in 1980, there was a three-year project to saw off the unnecessary concrete and the weight, and shred the weight to its now weighs 9,800 tonnes. It gets a new coat of paint every 7 years, which adds another 7 tonnes to it. A little bit about Gustave Eiffel. He was a very successful French engineer. He had a number of successful projects and a few unsuccessful projects. He was responsible for putting the scaffolding up on the in America for the Statue of Liberty, and he also had a go at trying for the Panama Canal, which was a disaster. But the Eiffel Tower proves that his name will live on for a long time. The next landmark I'm going to talk about is of Christ the Redeemer, which is the Art Deco statue of Christ overlooking Rio. It is in fact on top of Cavacodo Mountain, which is outside Rio. The first idea of a statue came about in the 1850s, and this was by a Catholic priest, and this was an idea to honour the Brazilian Princess Isabella. But the country went into republic in the 1870s, and the idea was forgotten. The second proposal was in 1920s, and the Brazilian Catholic Church raised the money and then considered the designs for the statue. And the design they chose was by a French-Polish sculptress by the name of Paul Ladinsky. So Paul Lewinsky's design was chosen, and construction started in 1922. And construction, in fact, lasted 9 years, and there are a number of reasons. One of the reasons why is because the Catholic Church had to raise money. Two is because the actual sculpture was, all the sculpture was in fact made in France and then transported from France to Brazil, and that took time. And two, because they were building on the Cavacodo Mountain, which was 700 metres up, or nearly 2,500 feet up, there was no way helicopters to transport the material construction. At first it was going to be made out of steel, and they then thought that this was not going to be the material they wanted. They wanted to make it out of reinforced concrete with an outer coat of limestone. Now, these materials are
were transported by hand at the start, but they actually manufactured, or not manufactured, but they made a railway to transport the goods up to the top of the mountain. By 1932, they completed the statue, which weighs 632 tons. The statue's height is 30 metres tall, and it has a wingspan or arms width of 35 metres. And ever since then, it has has been one of the most iconic landmarks in the world. And in fact, in 2007, it was nominated and given the one of the statues of the Seven Great Wonders of the World.